Welcome to another episode of Bulletproof. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Steve Sanulis. We want to thank everybody again for making us a top 10 podcast. And again, it's not because of my voice or what I do. It's because I have some really cool, amazing guests, and I'm not going to disappoint you yet again. So this next gentleman he's SWAT. He's an operator. He's a combative instructor and an entrepreneur. But more importantly, he's someone who spent years stress testing what actually works when things go sideways. I could have used it myself with a couple of things, but this isn't about fantasy or internet operated culture. This is about decisions, discipline, and consequence. I'm joined today by Jared Wahongi. Jared, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for the invite. It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Oh, where are you from, Jared? Now I'm noticing an accent. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from New Zealand.
New Zealand, okay.
Yep. And
yeah, I didn't notice that when we were talking a little offline until we just started talking now, and I could totally pick up the accent.
Yeah, it's stuck a little bit. Yep, still there. I've been in the States a long time, but it's still there.
Listen, I'm being from New York. I know a lot about accents. You know what I mean? Even when I don't think I have one. You know, as soon as I leave New York, people are like, "You're from New York," and I'm like, "Well, I guess, yeah." So, so I get accents in a different way, but so just to get into a couple things today, right? So, again, a very interesting background, but when most people see titles like SWAT, entrepreneur, what part of your background actually changed, and how do you see danger in that? I mean, what got you into, and how did you become a SWAT?
Yeah, I mean, that was my younger years when I was originally figuring out what I wanted to be, and I got into law enforcement. I always had this attraction to, like, eliteness. I always wanted to be the best I could be, and that's always been a part of my nature. And for me, becoming a police officer, I saw SWAT as that, as when I got into the career and got my years in. In my department I was working at Salt Lake City, we had to work 3 years on patrol before we could apply to test for SWAT. So I got my time in, I was preparing, and it was a really attractive thing for me, an attractive part of law enforcement. And so, yeah, went through the selection and got picked up by the team.
So again, because we interview a lot of different, police officers, SWAT, CIA, FBI, what have you. And it's usually interesting to me because I was former NYPD. I was only a police officer for 7 years, and I got injured and stuff. But judging by your answer from before, is something like this is something you were just attracted to as a kid and you were just always into it. Is that factual?
Yeah. I kind of didn't know if I wanted to go the military or the law enforcement route. I knew it was going to be one of the two, but it is something since my childhood that I was attracted to. Yep.
And it's funny. 50% of the people I interview, right, either say exactly what you said or, they just kind of fell into it, or I myself, my father was a police officer, my brother, my uncle, my cousins. I never had interest. You know what I mean? It was just that at the time, back when I was 18, 19, I actually was working at Chippendales, believe it or not. And
I saw that on your bio. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Right. So again, which was awesome. Right. Yeah. But my father was like, listen, what are you going to do? You need something steady and take the test. And obviously I got called when I was young, and obviously, I did it, but I wasn't like, oh my God, I want to be, I was always kind of not into it so much, but then I fell into it. And obviously I loved it for the time I was there. But what made you come from New Zealand though, to come to become a police officer in the States, as opposed to not doing it in New Zealand?
Yeah, it was a roundabout story. My father is a native Maori from New Zealand, and my mother is actually from Texas, Southeast Texas. And my father had come to the U.S. in the early '60s through educational opportunities, and he met my mother in the States, and they married and had a few. Four of the six kids were born in the U.S. I was one of those, and I was only 1 year old when he took the family back to New Zealand. So I was born Utah, moved to New Zealand, was raised there, ended up coming back to the US and kind of, went through college and as an adult and kind of got into my career here in the US, which is kind of what led to that.
What would you say? Two-part question. What would you say is A, the biggest misconception about becoming SWAT? And what type of training did you have to go through to become SWAT?
Probably one of the biggest misconceptions, that when I talk to people that aren't in the law enforcement career is that SWAT is a separate, job from a police officer. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna apply for, to be a SWAT officer or something like that. It's kind of not how it works. You got a SWAT officer is a cop first and foremost, and they have to kind of, in larger cities, they have to kind of get get in the trenches a little bit and work on the street or usually a patrol capacity, whatever they can do in a few years it takes before you can apply to be on a SWAT team. But that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions is that it's a separate job from a police officer. A SWAT officer is first and foremost a cop, a street cop. And sorry, the second part of that question was
I mean, was there a certain part of training, or is it something that's basically based on the merit of your what you've done so far as a police officer? How do you apply?
It kind of I've noticed that it differs across the country depending on how large the agency is. The larger the agency, the more competitive it can become. Smaller agencies like 10 to 30 man departments, it's like they kind of need as many people as they can get to work on a team sometimes. And so if you've got kind of what it takes, then they'll put you on the team. Larger cities, it is more of a competitive selection. So you typically you got to get X number of years in working on the street. And then you apply, you put an application. They take a look at your work ethic. Okay, the last 3 to 5 years, this guy's, his supervisors have said here he's a hard worker, this, that, the other. And so you apply for it, and if you get accepted into the selection, it might be a physical test, like what happened in my department to make sure that hey, this guy can actually make it through the week-long selection that they put you through. So there's some kind of just a general physical test on top of your application. If you pass that, you get accepted in, then a lot of agencies will have some kind of a selection. It's sometimes it might be called a SWAT school, so it might be half academic, half kind of seeing if you've got what it takes. And then the way that my department did it was, throughout that week, the instructors for that SWAT selection are actually team members, and they kind of are observing everyone going through the test, and they'll rank you based on how you perform that week, and then whoever ranks the top of the list at the end of that selection will be number one to get chosen if an opening comes on the team during that year. Some people they say they may be number four on the list during that year. They didn't get picked up, so they got to go through the SWAT school again, the SWAT selection again the next year to be able to stay on the list and try and get on the team. So it can be quite competitive sometimes. Timing is everything. If you got a lot of people that leave the team that year, you might get a better chance of getting picked up, but it's definitely an attempt to find people that are going to make it a good SWAT cop. Which and a big part of that is discipline. A big part of that is mental acuity. A big part of that is teamwork. A SWAT team is a team, and some people have got everything that it takes except the ability to work well on a team. So all these things they're looking for in that selection.
Well, again, for everybody who's listening, I mean, out here with the NYPD, they're called ESU, Emergency Service. And again, for anybody who's not familiar, the cool thing about SWAT, ESU, all those agencies within the departments, the police departments, is you go only to the cool jobs. Meaning, when you're on patrol, well, you might answer a domestic, well, domestic violence could turn, but you might answer, writing summonses. You might have to deal with burglary alarms, writing, different things like that. And then you might have that one big job, and that's when SWAT, ESU. They respond. So they respond to anything that's what you would deem dangerous, I guess, or cool.
High hazard, yeah.
So if you're a if you're like the junkie for adrenaline to have nonstop fucking awesome things and jobs a day, that's SWAT, that's ESU, that's what's cool about it. So again, and you definitely have to be trained because you have to know, again, you deal with EDPs. Emotionally disturbed people. You deal with high energy situations. So again, you have to have, again, the training, like Jared said, you have to have discipline. You can't be a cowboy, but sometimes you have to do what you have to do, but you can't just, maybe in the 80s and 90s was a little different, but in today's day and age, as I'm, Jared, I'm going to ask as well. You have to be a little bit more, again, I'm going to use the word discipline again, but again, that's really explains a little bit, I guess, hopefully to the listeners, the difference between SWAT and these entities within the department. It's going to all awesome, I guess. I'll call it awesome. I'll call it high energy. I'll call it dangerous jobs. That's all you answer in a day. So, that's for people listening to understand the difference between. But Jared, I got to ask you, right? Now, you were in Utah, you said? Salt Lake City?
Utah. Yep, that's right.
Okay. What was, again, if you may ask me the craziest things I ever dealt with, it's the most dangerous, the craziest things come right back to me. I know to me what's crazy, what I experienced. What would you say was the craziest job you ever got called to, as well as the biggest job that almost went sideways, that if if things went a little further, it would have been not so good. So what would you say was the most craziest job or the most dangerous job you ever encountered?
I'll be honest with you. Sometimes the most dangerous jobs that, as I think about things that I respond on, was things that I didn't know were going to be dangerous. Those very unpredictable situations, right?
Right.
So those, that's the reality of this. I mean, with SWAT, I definitely went on several high hazard scenarios that I knew I was getting into, right? So I was prepared. I was with a team. I was with the most trained, best equipped officers on the department. And we went into these bad situations, and so definitely your adrenaline is pumping, and but you know that something, that the chances are high that something is going to happen. Probably the most dangerous situations are the ones where you, as a patrol officer, you don't know what's going to happen. It could be, like you said, it could be something as simple as a trespasser, and then that trespasser turns into a fight for your life. Where, and you're on your own sometimes, well, at least in city, in a lot of city. I think in New York, I think you guys mostly work with a pair. Most parts of
Of
the
course.
country, yeah, most parts of the country, that's not the case. You work on your own, and
And
yeah.
I still think to this day, putting little country towns aside, in any type of situation where you have a high populated area, I think it's so
Just a, just the government budgets. They just don't want to allocate the money it costs to hire enough officers that that can be a reality. And it does create volatile situations, even situations where excessive force might be used because an officer's on their own. They're used to, and they maybe panic and use maybe more force than they might be reasonable given in a given situation. I totally agree that one man officer, it's just the reality of policing in the US in most parts. I know that New York did a good job of cleaning up the city because of the allotted manpower that just made it happen, through, especially working I work in countries around the world where sometimes they work in four, patrol works in four man teams in some parts of the city because that's just what it takes to kind of make places safe.
Yeah, no, and like I said, I mean, again, not to get into, what's going on. We'll touch on today's, on today's, what's going on in the world. I mean, if you're working right now, again, we'll just say ICE, right? I mean, in today's day and age, right? If this was 10, 15 years ago, they would, you do what you have to do, and nobody, would even. Doing, be working ICE. Even, only because you can't win And that's what I was saying before. You have to be disciplined because when I got on 94, right? So it was pre-cell phone, it was there, but not that we did anything wrong. But we were lucky enough to work on the Giuliani, right, in Bratton. And they were pro cops, and and if there was a peaceful protest, well, again, it's fine. One person got out of line, they would say, go, take them, fuck them, take them, right? Gone. The second person got out of line, fucking grab them out of the line, take them. Third, they were all gone and everybody fucking dispersed. And that was how you did it. That's how you did it. To stand down today and have people yell, spit, fucking call you names, and you have to sit there and stand down. I wouldn't last in today's, you know what I
It's
mean?
a tough it's and it's not, I mean, even if you go before the the hatred towards ICE, even if the policing in the last 6 years, I think a big turning point was the George Floyd riots, where you saw a lot of officers leave the profession because of the lack of support towards them, and so and the intense scrutiny towards them being able to do their jobs, which creates more violent crime in the community, and it's really the civilian populace that suffer when violent crime increases. So even if you kind of look at the last 6 plus years, I think being a police officer in general is a much harder job than it was 20 years ago, and it's just gotten harder, especially for, like you said, for people like ICE that are under a microscope for just doing their jobs. So yeah.
Well, again, and you're 100% right. And we just had a mayor who just, well, 2 mayors ago, Mayor de Blasio, was such so against the cops and such a cop hater. And I forget the officer's name who got shot. But he came into the hospital. I guess, and again, not because he gave a fuck, just for optics. And every cop turned their back on him. And I've never in the history in the NYPD ever seen cops just turn their back on the fucking mayor, which was awesome. You
Yeah,
know
I
what I
remember
mean?
that.
Because everybody knows, he didn't give a fuck. It was the optics for the press. And anyway, the point is, what year did you get on, Jared?
2000.
2000. All right. So you were just getting, there when cell phone cameras really becoming a thing, right?
Wasn't quite a thing yet at that point. It was probably within maybe, I don't know, within 5 years or so, 5 to 10 years after that, that it started to become more prevalent.
So, if Jared was 21 today, right, and just got called to the police department, you'd be a rookie, 20, 21 years old, whatever the age is to get on in Utah. Do you think you would be able to last today, in today's society, and still be the cop you were back in 2000?
2000, Jared would probably not. Now, if I was raised in today's generation and things that are today considered, I guess, normal, who knows? But the way that things were done 25, 20, 26 years ago, I guess now, compared to now, it would be very difficult. I don't know how long I would be able to last. And who knows if I would even get the job. That sometimes some police departments are so picky now, and I still teach at police academies. I still have a lot of friends now that are chiefs of police and so on and so forth. They're given such a difficult job with the type of recruit that go into law enforcement. I'm not saying they're all bad, but it's definitely not the individual that joined policing 30 years ago. That it's they're looking for, a lot of times they're looking for that kinder, gentler individual, which is not a bad thing, so long as that individual can switch it on when it's time to switch it on. A lot of these young, cadets they're getting can't switch it on, and so they are a liability to the public, really. And they're being put in a police academy, and the instructors are given the job to train this individual into being a cop, and some of them just not cut out for the job, and so it's just a difficult dynamic that's going on, I think, in law enforcement across the country right now.
You know, it's funny you say that, right? Again, I don't want to sound like my father or what have you, but in not, right before I was going to get on, when I was, now almost going through the process, right? First of all, if you had an unpaid park, forget about ever being arrested for a misdemeanor or a felony. Forget that. If you had an unpaid parking ticket, you aren't going to get on. If you they came to your neighborhood, interviewed neighbors about your personality and type of person you are, right? You could not go to roll call. Okay, let me go even go back further. You couldn't have tattoos, right? If you did, you had to see the psychiatrist explain what and why you got these and what they mean to you, right? And in the summertime, if you had visible tattoos, you could not wear long short sleeves. You could not have any type of facial hair, and your back of your hair couldn't touch your collar, right? I was in the city 2 days ago. I saw a dude with two long sleeves. He had a full beard and a man bun, and he was wearing a uniform. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Now you can be a cop if you were arrested of a felony. And again, I might be saying it wrong, but you could be a cop even if you're arrested as, with certain felonies, let alone a misdemeanor. So they're really fucking struggling to get
It's
people on the job.
and that and you kind of go back to the whole defund the police thing and so on and so forth. I think the lack of support, general support in the public towards law enforcement really creates a much smaller hiring pool. You've got less people that want to get into the career, and that's not good for the public. It's not good for safety. It's a service. The higher, the largest hiring pool you have, and you're just taking the cream of the crop from that hiring pool, obviously you're going to have a higher caliber of officer out there. But when you have, when it's when the hiring pool is slim pickings, you've got to really just kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel sometimes. I'm not saying that's all it is in law
No, you're
enforcement,
pretty right. You're pretty on par.
but then it really lowers the standard, and again, that's not what the community needs. Officers that physically and intellectually are more capable of providing a better service.
Altered, kind of went over and went to his next phase of his life.
Sure.
So what would you say is the most overrated piece of gear in ESH in SWAT?
And SWAT, overrated piece of gear, probably. I'm gonna say, and this is, you could say this to law enforcement also. I'm gonna say tasers.
Jesus. Okay. Most underrated skill that you need.
Defensive tactics.
Fight or de-escalate. Most people choose wrong.
De-escalate when possible.
Heart of the train, body of mind.
The mind.
Okay. Best advice you ever ignored at first, but realized it was good advice.
Oh gosh, that's that's a tough one. Go into business.
Okay. All right, I didn't expect that. Okay. One habit that keeps people alive longer.
Situational awareness.
Confidence or awareness, what's more important?
That's a good one. Oh, there's kind of sixes on those two, but I'm going to say confidence.
Training myth you wish would die.
Training mission that you can just shoot people. I'll just shoot them.
Well, how about shoot him in the leg? Why didn't he shoot them in the leg? When someone's coming at you with a knife, why didn't you just
Shoot the knife out of his hand or something like
right,
that.
exactly. Calm or aggressive? What wins more often?
Calm.
Confidence? I said that one to you already. So, and the last one. What word would you say defines real preparedness for any situation?
Training.
Okay. And if young, I guess that we already touched on this, but would young Jared go join a police department today?
Knowing what I know today, probably not.
Yeah, listen, again, that's fit. We do this ask question all the time, and I would say 50%. I'm not just talking about NYPD or any PD for that matter. So I'm talking about FBI, CIA. They all say the same thing. If they had to go back today, I'm talking about non-active that were active, 20 years ago or what have you. So how has the police department helped you transition to where you are today, and what are you doing, and let the audience know what Jared is actually doing today?
Yeah, and so I mean, even with your question, would I become a police officer today? I am what I am today because of my law enforcement
Of
career.
course.
So you know, that's I to be fair, it opened opportunities for me. And so right now, you know, today I travel the world as a trainer. I teach defensive tactics, combatives, martial arts, firearms tactics. I kind of, for me, firearms are part of defensive tactics. I don't
Of course.
consider it separate. I think, you know, it's all kind of in the same realm. And that's what I do today because of my law enforcement career. It opened up doors for me. I was I'm not gonna, I guess I won't get too deep into how that all happened. But as a law enforcement officer, I started to become a trainer. I was a police academy. I got pulled into the police academy to teach defensive tactics because of my martial arts background. That opened up doors that kind of just continued to snowball and increased opportunities. And next thing you know it, I'm trying to decide, you know, what do I want to be when I grow up? You know, a trainer or a police officer? I don't have time for both as my side business as a trainer started to grow. And I decided to take that leap into the private sector. I've maintained. I didn't want to leave law. I loved law enforcement. I love doing that job. I didn't want to leave it completely. So until this day, I've reserved. I, you know, I was. I went into a reserve status, and I do that to this day in Utah. Kind of keep, I guess, one toe in the door as a law enforcement officer. But yeah, right today, I you know. I did a lot of military contracts back when there was back during the war, you know, the GWAT years, and that kind of opened up, you know, the opportunity for me to jump into the private sector, and so that's what I do today. Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, I can imagine when people hear, hey, this guy's coming in, he's a retired SWAT, to the private world, right? Or private sector. That's cool. You know what I mean? That's, when you're looking to get you trained by somebody in that particular firearms, self-awareness, protection, all those things. I mean, as soon as you hear SWAT, yeah, it's like fucking let's go. It's so yeah. So again, I'm not saying you're putting down the police department at all. No, I'm just saying, again, as you and I both know, it's changed. And again, if somebody came on the police department today, they don't know what you and I know, right? They only know what today. So for them, that's all they know. So I usually say, and what you're saying, and I'm not speaking for you, but clarifying, we just live by a different set of rules. And it's funny because, again, when I was in the 90s, 94, when I met veteran guys that were in the 80s, they're like, oh, the job's not what it used to be. You know what I mean? And I was like, really? You know what I mean? Because it was still pretty fucking crazy. So again, and I'm sure the guys in the 70s told the guys in the 80s and vice versa. So if you only know, cell phones, community, communities having cell phones and body cams and, the public perception of what you can and cannot do, can and cannot do, I should say. Yeah, that's why, everybody that says, well, I don't know if I can do it today, is not poo-pooing the department. They're just, it's a different time. That's all. So
And I think a lot of that is really just you see a common, not thankfully not, you know, across the board, but you see a lack of administrative support for officers, and that's always been a problem in some departments. It, you know, comes and goes with depending on who's the chief, But I think in today's political climate, you see a lot less support as chiefs that are appointed by the mayor are really being political in how they tiptoe around things and don't always give the support, which is why I love to see chiefs that do give the support to the
Oh, yeah.
officers that they need to be able to do their job and stay safe and serve the communities better.
Absolutely. So Jared, before we close out, because we're going to run against it here, how do our listeners find you? What is your social media? What is your LinkedIn?
Yeah,
How do people that want to get in touch with you reach out to you?
so it's just my name, Jared Wihongi. I'm willing to bet I'm the only one with my name in this country, but it's not a common last name. It's just under my name, and in fact, my first to last name.com, all my training websites are kind of connected to that. When I say my training website, I've got my traditional Filipino martial arts training, and then my more combative self-defense training websites, and so they're both connected to jaredwehongi.com, and my social media is just under my name.
And when you have social media, is it, are you on, obviously I know you're on LinkedIn, but are you on any other social media platforms?
Yeah, mostly Instagram and Facebook. I have a presence there. Yep.
Awesome. So again, anybody listening, like to reach out to Jared, if Jared would be so kind to accept you or answer your
Absolutely.
questions,
I
you
get
can
contacted
absolutely.
all the time, pretty much on a daily basis from people around the world. So, yep, you can reach me at one of those social media platforms.
That's amazing. And listen, Jared, I could speak to you for a long time. We didn't really even get into some of the war stories, but
That's true. That's true.
yeah, I know, but maybe we could do that again next
Yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Or when something crazy happens, either here, which most likely will happen more than there, maybe we'll Monday morning quarterback it on
Absolutely,
when your doors
absolutely.
were.
Yeah,
You know
use
what I
me.
mean?
Yeah, feel free to reach out anytime, Steve. Use me as a resource. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, for everybody listening, again, Jared Wihongi, Hongi,
Yep.
Jared Wihongi,
Yep. That's it.
amazing. What a great guy. I could talk to him for hours. I want to, encourage you, if you have any questions, please reach out. I want to thank everybody for listening today. I want to thank our sponsors and producers at Believe. Like always, stay bulletproof. This episode will be out next week. And again, we are in the top 10, but we could jump six more spots. And for you and everybody listening, I am really grateful. And let's kick ass 2026. Stay bulletproof. We'll see you real soon.
Awesome. Thank you.